The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game. With me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. One of us is looking at that money a bit gingerly because I did a marathon march yesterday, which my bubble managed to seasonally adjust into 28 miles. Kieran, which was a mistake, although we had a little break at 20 miles for a couple of miniature whiskies sitting in the forest in Surrey, so that was quite nice.
That sounds sounds a splendid day out.
Yeah, it was, except as somebody pointed out, with I was walking with my five-year plan pod boys, and somebody said the two older, it looked like me and the other older member of the chat were hobbits being rescued by elves. But thank you for your donation, Kieran, it's much appreciated. It's questions day, Kieran, and my first question to you, based on what you've just told me, is how much can your granddaughter eat?
Well, we took her for her first time we've been out with her for a roast meal down the local pub, and she absolutely demolished it at the age of 14 months. It was a delight to watch, and I just wish I could eat like that. You know, the ability to throw food on the floor and not care. I'll have to wait until I'm 70 before I can get away with that again.
That's true. It can't get better than that as a 14-month-old, sitting on granddad's knee, just shoving gravy-filled Yorkshire pudding into your face. Life is beautiful for some people, Kieran, isn't it? It's questions day, Kieran, but there are some news stories to talk about, two of which are causing quite the stir, and one of which in particular I think we'll have to talk about in much greater detail on Wednesday. First of all, Kieran, fans will be able to watch all the Premier League games that haven't been selected for broadcast in October on a pay-per-view basis at £14.95 each. Now, Kieran, as you know, I try to remain neutral as the presenter of this. I prefer to wind you up, point you in the right direction and let you go.
Which you do very well.
Which I do very well. But I'm furious. I'm genuinely furious about this. Firstly, clubs like Palace, Brighton and Burnley are unfairly hit because we'll be on TV much less than the big clubs. And secondly, I was convinced by Steve Parish's argument. So I bought a season ticket, which means now I'm paying to not watch games and I'm expected to pay to watch them as well. It's not happening. You talk about a tin ear all the time. It's so infuriating. Whose initiative was this, Kieran, and who will get the money?
Right. I've done quite a bit of ferreting over this particular story in the last 36 hours, spoken to, to be fair to the Premier League, I did phone their press office and they gave me an answer. So at least they're talking to us, which is more than you can say for the EFL. I've spoken to some journalists as well. The way the story goes is as follows. My understanding is on Thursday night, the Premier League chairman were told about this meeting in advance. Yeah, i.e. they could sleep on it. Right. They turned up at the meeting on Friday and they were given this, they're given the following choice. Either half the matches in the Premier League people never get to see because it's they're not going to be broadcast for free. Right. Or you pay £14.95. You are not allowed to adjust the price. The price has been set by the broadcasters and not the Premier League clubs. So, yeah, let's be honest. There's been a complete shitstorm about this, and I was absolutely livid. I think it's overpriced. I think by all accounts, the vote was 19-1 in favour, and I think what Premier League club chairman had done, they've said quite a few of them aren't happy about it, but they'd rather give fans the choice of either paying for an overpriced product or just saying, I'm going to listen to it on the radio.
Yeah, or find a dodgy stream, which is what a lot of the fans will do.
Well, we've had this conversation before. You know, everybody's got a big Dave down the pub who can get you a dodgy Fire Stick. Now, I'm not condoning people that do things of that nature, but if you get your pricing wrong, and we saw that with the music industry, you know, 25 years ago with the rise of Napster and things like that. If you get your pricing wrong and you treat people with disdain, what still could be technically illegal becomes socially acceptable.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a genuine danger that I know for 50 quid, I can watch all of the Premier League games, including the ones I've already watched on Sky and BT. I choose not to do that because I don't feel comfortable about it. I don't know where the money's going. But now I'm feeling a bit sore. And also I'm feeling, you know, have I been sort of too much of a goody two-shoes? Let's face it, I am a goody two-shoes for my own good and have made it to me look a bit of a mug. The price is wrong. Given the argument put forward by the Premier League is that there's more cameras at the Premier League games than there is for the EFL iFollow service. So therefore, they're going to charge you 50% more. But my argument is that the football match isn't 50% longer in terms of time. And if I'm honest, I don't get 50% more enjoyment from watching my team win than a Rochdale fan does who pays a tenner, because we all love our clubs the same. So I think the price has really riled people. As you rightly said, it discriminates against clubs of the stature of ours. And to a certain extent, if this price has been set by the broadcasters, this is what we should do as fans. Simply don't pay for it. Yeah. And they will learn that their pricing structure is wrong. It's not the same as Anthony Joshua paying, you know, against Tyson Fury, where they might, you know, I know that Sky have done pay-per-view before and it's 25 or 30 quid. But, you know, for that, you know, because you do get a bunch of mates round and it's a genuine one-off experience. No disrespect, West Bromwich Albion versus Burnley at 5:30 on a Monday afternoon doesn't have the same "were you there" sense of excitement or uniqueness. So that's well.
I find it odd, Kieran, because this is probably generational, and obviously I can't speak for young people. But in previous seasons, before COVID, if Palace were playing away at Burnley and it wasn't on TV, and I'm not the sort of person, I don't like looking for dodgy streams, as I don't like watching away games on telly anyway. I'll get very superstitious. But I'm quite happy to wait and watch the highlights on Match of the Day. I'm not one of those people that has to watch every single minute of every single football game, because every single minute of every single football game isn't available and has never been for most of my life. So I kind of resent this implication that we're a captive audience who are dim enough to pay 15 quid to watch a game where we could wait till the end of it and see the highlights pretty much on the Sky app or whatever. It's, I just think at a time when people, and they know people are struggling for money, they must know Premier League clubs what the issues are with season tickets. It's suddenly they're saying, well, as I say, you're being asked to pay to not watch football games live, and now you've been asked to pay to watch them live. It's infuriating.
It is. I suspect we will see this week an awful lot of Premier League clubs write to fans who are season ticket holders and say, we're on, we've got one home game, we've got two home games, or we've got three home, however many games it is. What we are going to do is that we are going to give you a rebate of, let's say, if you're on twice, I think Brighton are on twice, I think Burnley are on three times. If you're Burnley, we will give you a £45 rebate on the season ticket money that you've already paid. And then it's your choice. You can stick it in your back pocket, or you can use that. So I honestly don't think that the Premier League clubs on an individual basis are necessarily the bogeymen on this. Right. I think the Premier League hierarchy, along with the broadcasters who are coming out of this smelling of roses, are the people who have made a poor decision. If it had been a tenner, I wouldn't be moaning. But 15 quid, it's not the same. And again, this argument, we've got all of these cameras there and you've got to go and pay for that privilege. Well, you know, I think the technical word for that is bollocks.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because, as you rightly said, it's going to be on Match of the Day, and therefore you need the 7 or the 9 cameras for Match of the Day to get the standard of broadcast. So therefore there is no extra cost being incurred by the broadcasters for this. So don't treat us as if we're stupid. You know, there is this commonly held belief that we as football fans can have the wool pulled over our eyes. And the thing is, you know, within a football fan base these days, you've got doctors, you've got lawyers, you've got architects, you've got comedy writers and authors, such as yourself, of course.
We
won't take this lying down. The Football Supporters Association are angry. We've seen some really lucid, sensible comments come out from some of the fan groups as well. Sometimes, if you make a mistake, and let's face it, both Liverpool and Spurs made mistakes with regards to the furlough. If you're man enough, if you've got a pair of cojones, and you know, hopefully smooth ones, following our sponsorship from Manscaped, then you'll admit that there's a ways around this. You know, you could, and if they want to save face, tell you what. Tell fans, if they book up for the matches in advance, we'll give you an early bird discount for $9.95 and see what the take-up is, if you book 48 hours before the match takes place. You know, there are ways around this for everybody to come out of this looking a little bit better than they are now. So my anger was initially at the clubs and the Premier League. As I've delved more into it, I've got to say, I think the broadcasters here have not played this very well.
Well, also, they don't seem to realise, Kieran, that football fans instinctively know how much is too much. It's like, I'll pay 30 quid for an away game. I paid 50 quid to get into Fulham for the first game of last season because it's the first game of the season. But otherwise, I'm not paying 50 quid for an away game. And most fans know where the limit is. In the same way that I get asked to do a lot of benefits, a lot of live comedy shows, or used to when we had a live comedy scene. And when people were saying, how much should we charge for tickets? And they would say, let's charge £25, £30 to get in. And I say, no, don't do that, because comedy fans won't pay £25, £30. Anything above 15 quid, they won't want to do that, because it's the same with football fans, and broadcasters don't seem to realise that. But there are better news for some EFL supporters, because some of the fans may be able to watch live matches at EFL grounds in the near future.
Yes, this is both good news and testament to the lunacy in terms of the world in which we're living at present. We've been given access to a proposal from the EFL where clubs can allow their fans to watch matches at the grounds from the hospitality lounges with the blinds pulled down on a big screen.
No,
so
yeah.
You can't watch the match outdoors, where your chances of catching COVID are, by all accounts, very, very remote.
Yeah.
But you can watch it indoors, presumably sat down. And I think what some clubs will be doing, you know, they'll be offering you the 3-course meal in the hospitality lounge. Clearly, they'll be charging you far more than a tenner, but I have no issue with that. You know, for those EFL clubs who need the money, then fair play to them. And you'll be able to do that, I think, for both home and away games as well. Now, this could actually be something which the Premier League clubs could offer in due course. And I think if we're operating in a COVID world, we need to start thinking creatively.
Yeah.
So, you know, many clubs, for example, have got fairly big car parks. Well, let's have drive-in football.
Mm.
Yeah, can you imagine? You go to a match with 3 or 4 of your mates. You get some that they can deliver food to your window. You watch it on a big screen. You know, all of a sudden, it's a bit like being a teenager again.
Yeah.
So I think there is scope for the Premier League and other clubs to start to use this. I think these pay-per-view events, perhaps they could take place at a cinema, in which case, you know, could it be that the cinema pays a fee and you end up paying less than $14.95? I'm just thinking outside of the box here. But I think, you know, fair play to the EFL for this. You know, it is a way of clubs generating money. We want all clubs to survive.
See, the cinema idea is a good one. It's imaginative, but as Steve Parish pointed out, 2 cinemas showed the Chelsea Palace game live in the cinema, one of which had 400 people in, And yet 400 people are allowed to sit in the cinema watching Chelsea play Palace, but none of them are allowed into Stamford Bridge to see it. We finished the marathon march yesterday at Selhurst Park in a big hospitality suite. Now, friends and family weren't allowed in. They had to wait outside for us, but there were 120 of us in a giant room having a socially distanced, nice time with beer being brought to our tables. If Palace were playing on the other side of the screen, we wouldn't have been allowed into the ground to watch them. It makes no sense. Now, Kieran, two stories to talk about, one of which is massive, but both of which involve Liverpool to an extent. And the first one is that Liverpool owners are thinking of floating the club's parent company on the stock market. Why would they do that?
Well, the reason why they could do that, Kevin, is that it's a way of generating the positives are that you can raise capital. So the owners of Liverpool Football Club, the Fenway Sports Group, paid 300 million quid, which is now, of course, looking an absolute bargain to acquire the club about 6 or 7 years ago. What they're trying to do now is that they're going to the aim is to float the club on the, I think, some form of US stock exchange at a valuation of around about 8 billion. So what will happen is that the existing shareholders could become very wealthy on the back of this. Now, they don't just own a Liverpool Football Club. They own the Boston Red Sox as well. So, that's the good thing. In theory, fans of Liverpool could buy shares in the club, although, all you're doing is really getting a piece of paper. The downside of floating on a stock exchange is that you end up being, you become the puppet of the market. Mm. The focus will be on financial issues rather than sporting issues, which is really, again, sort of linked to our next question. Could there be a Super League and things? We've seen in respect of Manchester United, they're spending £22 million a year giving dividends to shareholders, and the banks are taking another 20-odd million out of the club as well. It could also get messy. You're trying to work out, well, who are the owners of the clubs? Because they can become, very scattered. So there's... I can see the benefits from the club owner's point of view. In terms of the benefit for, I work in Liverpool, as you know. Mm. I think the reaction from my friends to date has been, we're not particularly comfortable about this. We still see ourselves as a local club and potentially being listed on an American stock exchange and dealt with by the whims of hedge fund managers and private equity. Well, not private equity, but pension funds and things of this nature doesn't make us feel particularly comfortable.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if those same Liverpool fans feel comfortable about this story, Kieran. And I suspect that we probably need to hold most of this over until Thursday, because it's a massive story that's emerged today. It's dominated the airwaves. It's dominated the thoughts of football fans all over social media, because Liverpool and Manchester United have released a blueprint, according to the Daily Telegraph, for a change to football, in particular a change to the Premier League. And they've said that if the EFL agree to this change, they can get £250 million. It seems to me, being of a cynical background, that this looks like a terrible opportunist move using COVID to sneak in change that a lot of people won't want. But perhaps you could elaborate a little bit on what this blueprint says.
Yes, so this appears to have been initiated by Liverpool and Manchester United. Now, we've just said that Liverpool are potentially going on some form of stock exchange. Manchester United are also on a stock exchange, i.e., what these clubs are doing is best for the stock markets. It's not good for football. I don't even think it's good for the regular fans at Old Trafford or Anfield either. The proposals would involve the Premier League being cut to 18 clubs, the playoffs are being now between the club that finishes 16th in the Premier League and three clubs from the top of the Championship, the abolition of the Community Shield, the abolition, effectively, of the Carabao Cup as far as Premier League clubs are concerned. If the EFL want to run it, they don't really care. There were some other weird things that Premier League clubs can lend up to four players to another club. Mm. This is B teams through the back door, in my view. Yeah. And the EFL to still be sort of three divisions of 24. So we end up with a professional game of 90 clubs instead of 92. Now, I can't remember the last time we didn't have 92, apart from when clubs went bust. So here we have American owners who have been in the game for about 7 or 8 years at Liverpool, American owners who have been in the game, 15 years in the shape of Manchester United, wanting to destroy the history and the heritage of English football to make it more like the NFL. Because some of the other things that they're proposing is that the season will start later. And the reason for this is it will allow clubs to pay more exhibition games overseas. That's not what you became a Crystal Palace fan for. Yeah. That's not what I fell in love with the game for. And if I talk to my mates, certainly who I share an office with at Liverpool, well, you know, they're not bothered about, you know, if United or Liverpool playing Inter Milan in Pennsylvania. They want to see their club play at Anfield. This is also, of course, a gateway towards an expanded Champions League to start in 2024, which can only be achieved if you've cut back on domestic matches. Now, Kevin, have we ever discussed this before? Have you ever heard any of this nonsense before?
Yes.
And it's been on the show.
Yes.
Yeah. We've been saying this for 6 to 8 months, and everybody just go, yeah. And this isn't a case of a told you show, because I hate saying this stuff, but we know people in football. We've been tipped off about this type of stuff. We try to get it across to the listeners. It is bad news for football.
Yeah, I'm sorry it took me so long to say yes then, Kieran. I was genuinely concentrating on what you have to say, and I panic a little bit when you ask me direct questions. Well, also what's interesting this afternoon, and again, I think as it is a questions pod, I want to discuss this properly on Thursday, and I suspect that most of Thursday will be about this. But there are two things that particularly of note today. The fact is that basically, they're saying the league should be. They're talking about the league should be controlled by the nine clubs that have been in the Premier League the longest. They want to scrap one club, one vote. They want to scrap the idea of a majority, a straight majority of 14, which it is now. It'd be less than 18. But also, we're recording this on Sunday evening to go out very early Monday morning, and the Premier League have just issued a statement. Which then it's not a happy statement, and it's not a placatory statement. And in particular, they've singled out Rick Parry, and they said they're very, very disappointed that Rick Parry has already said that he agrees with this in principle and looks forward to the money. So that's interesting already that Rick Parry was so quick to say this sounds like a good idea, because clearly he's seen that you can have £250 million. And basically what the Premier League is saying is that Liverpool and Man United have no right to negotiate on the Premier League's behalf. And the Premier League said this is something that will take years of consultation. So it's a very, very divisive story. And as I say, I think it's one we probably need to leave properly until Thursday, if that's all right, Kieran. But the Premier League statement, the Premier League statement this afternoon was very interesting, because it's very rare, as we know, for the Premier League to A, react so quickly, and B, react in a way that's not. I'm trying to find what's the opposite of sitting on the fence. So they're sitting in a garden on one side and the other, basically, which is very unusual for the Premier League to issue such a strongly worded statement, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've seen a similar statement come from the DCMS. Perhaps we shouldn't be so surprised to hear the comments from former Liverpool chief executive, Rick Parry.
Yes, of course, yes. Let's get on to our questions. We have some very good questions this week, and I promise you, listeners, that we will talk about this on Thursday. And I think, as it is such a unique situation, if you want to ask us questions in particular about the Liverpool-Man United plan, we will be happy to answer those on Thursday as well, rather than wait until next week. Our first question comes from Joseph Thompson, and it's a question that turns out to be of interest to Palace fans, because Joseph says, Kieran, are you able to isolate the financial figures gained by a star player from a specific country? For example, to what extent was Ji-Sun Park a financially motivated move to gain access to South Korean markets for Man United? And are Spurs now dominant in that South Korean market because of Sun Heung-min? And it's interesting for me, because there are always rumours that when Palace signed Fan Jihee and Sun Ji-hai, it was as part of a commercial deal with Chinese TV and nothing to do with their abilities as footballers.
It's something which you're never able to prove.
Oh, okay.
Certainly, if you take a look at Manchester United's accounts for the year after they signed Ji-Sun Park, There wasn't a significant bump in revenue, but then if you think about it, Manchester United sell out every match regardless. So they can't sell any more tickets. They were regularly winning the champion, regularly winning the Premier League. So therefore they can't get any more TV or prize money. If we take a look at what's happened with Spurs, Son is just a very good footballer in my view. And certainly we've got one of the bargains of the decade. But they certainly, I mean, whenever I've been to see my side play at Spurs, certainly there have been a large number of Korean fans there, and they all buy the shirts from the merchandise. And of course, there's also a Korean TV channels. Yeah, they're very keen because he is their pin-up boy. He's a fantastic footballer. So there certainly are benefits from the club's point of view in being able to sign the commercial deals now in Southeast Asia on the back of that, because it makes it easier to do so. Because what you can do is you can say, well, if you become our Korean camera partner or our Korean airline partner, Jisun Park or Son or whoever it's going to be, will be the person who will be your sort of your brand ambassador and will be able to charge you a bit extra. Should that dictate things on the field? I think that's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
At times, it might impact upon recruitment, but I don't think it necessarily. I don't think it would ever impact upon the manager's ability to pick the team.
And I suppose as well, it's better for the individual player. I mean, if the player like Son is going to Man United or Spurs, that sort of increases his ownership, his sort of wage owning capacity, doesn't it? And sponsorships, etc., rather than Man United, I guess.
Yes, I mean certainly from an intellectual property point of view, when a shirt is sold with your name on the back from the individual club, you get a proportion of that. So clearly, the bigger the club, the more beneficial for the individual. And certainly, the clubs that we're talking about are global clubs in terms of their appeal. It's just that global appeal is now being focused perhaps a little bit more in certain countries than others.
You know, the problem when we signed Fan Jihee and Sun Jihai, who were Palace fans, loved them because they were two of the most reckless players I've ever seen in my life. They really were, and were always, they always get into trouble with referees, because apparently in China, one small subversion that people were allowed was to have a go at referees. But my dad used to be genuinely worried when we signed them, because Palace games were going out live in China. My dad was genuinely worried that if we scored and the whole of China jumped up and down, there would be a massive tidal wave. Now, our next question, Kieran, comes from Rob Winters. Is there a reason, says Rob, that these days we are far more aware of most transfers and takeover deals before they are confirmed? For example, the Newcastle takeover bid potential was played out in public, whereas the Man City takeover was pretty much under the radar until it was announced when it was done. Is this to do with clubs and agents leaking information to build interest, or is it just a change in the way the process is going?
My view is that in the main, people would much rather deals be done behind closed doors without anybody knowing. A bit similar to the pay-per-view deal that we've just been exposed to. When deals are being played out in the public, it's normally because one side or other has a vested interest in that information being passed on to journalists, or being passed on to bloggers, or being passed on to, you know, people that do podcasts or whatever, in terms of driving the price up, trying to put the pressure on the other party to either buy or sell, or things of this nature. We're also operating in a 24/7 world environment where everybody's got a channel to fill. You've got to get that information out and get your side of the argument across first as well. So in terms of the Liverpool deal, in terms of the Newcastle deal, I think some of the exposure which was coming and effectively being driven by Amanda Staveley and the PIF team was to try to shame Mike Ashley into selling the club because they were aware of his unpopularity with the fan base. Mm. So, you know, information isn't given away for no reason whatsoever. There's always an ulterior motive.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Okay, it's interesting. Gabriella Lowe has asked our next question, and it's regarding the potential All-Ireland League in Ireland. From a fan's perspective, I'll say that again because the blisters of my feet are affecting my tongue for some reason, Ken. I don't know why that would be. And I've managed to pronounce Ireland in the same way as Ireland, which won't please my family. From a fan's perspective, says Gabriella, I would absolutely love an All-Ireland League. I think it'd be great for Irish football. But Gabriella wonders if it's a financially stable idea. I believe, says Gabriella, that Irish clubs make minimal money. I may be wrong, says Gabriella, but I suspect she's not. And we've added expenses like travel. Would clubs make enough to make this sustainable?
Right. Well, first of all, Gabriella is absolutely correct. The Airtricity League, which is the Republic of Ireland League, had a total revenue of €15 million between the 10 clubs. Now, that's less than Crikey. Mesut Ozil earns in a year.
Yeah, I just worked that out myself. Yeah, that's not a lot, is it?
That's not a lot. So, and also, I looked at some of UEFA's statistics, and the Premier League by itself, this is to give, you know, we talk about the Premier League being a success. This is just how significant a success it is. The Premier League by itself generates more revenue than all 50 of the non-Big Five countries in UEFA.
Wow.
So exclude France, Italy, Spain and Germany. You put all the rest together, Premier League's bigger than them in terms of revenue. So clearly, you know, I think we've got to say, hey, you know, hats off to the Premier League. It is a very successful organisation. Where does this leave clubs in both the Republic of Ireland and the Northern Ireland League? They are relatively small. The TV money is as close to zero as you can possibly get, yeah. Because the RTE, the Irish Republic of Ireland broadcaster, not willing really to pay much money for it. It's just not enough excitement. I think there is a potential here from having an Ireland of Ireland league. And the reason for this is that it would potentially create interest in the fan base and rivalries and things of that nature, because you will have clubs from both Northern Ireland and the Republic wanting, and certainly the fans, to want to be top of that league, to be the best team in the whole island itself. As far as the extra costs are concerned, you know, we both have Irish families. We know how big the country is. I don't think issues such as transport would be too much of an issue. So if you take a look at the three main sources of revenue for a football club, in terms of match day, I think that would go up. I think what you would find is that some of the clubs, especially the, you know, there'd be good away followings going from one place of Ireland to another. In terms of commercial, I think the extra interest would generate a higher commercial and sponsorship revenue. And in terms of TV, I think the only complication here would, of course, be that, you know, the BBC is responsible for television in Northern Ireland, and RTE is responsible for TV in the Republic. But, you know, one of those two bodies, or you could have somebody such as Sky, who broadcasts sort of universally. I think they would find that quite attractive. So I think it's a very interesting idea by Gabriella. And from a financial point of view, there could certainly be benefits.
The trouble is, Kieran, from a financial point of view, it would benefit because Irish football is basically competing with the Premier League. I mean, you only have to be in Dublin on a Saturday morning to see how many flights are taking off to take Irish fans to see English football, and you only have to be in a pub in Ireland to see how popular Premier League football is there. So it does make economic sense, but unfortunately, my view is, unhappily, that there is still a lot of people in one part of the island particularly who, for historical reasons, won't want to see an all-Ireland league, and there will be people who say that for security reasons, it's not going to happen, basically, because they simply won't want fans from each side travelling across the border, will they?
I can understand that argument, and if that is the case, it's a shame, yeah. Because I think, you know, from a rugby perspective, the clubs both north and south have managed to come together, and it would be a challenge because as we know, football is probably more tribal with regards to issues of a sectarian nature, shall we say, than a sport such as rugby, but it could be. This is a way of addressing those.
That would be lovely, but, please God.
Although Rangers and Celtic would suggest that's not the case.
Yes. Now, our next question comes from Sammy Zeglam. Sammy, I apologise if I've pronounced your name incorrectly, although I don't really because you're a Brighton fan. I don't care how you pronounce it, Sammy. Sammy says, and I'll do this in a grown-up fashion because I'm a grown-up broadcaster. Sammy says, I'm a Brighton season ticket holder, but I live and work in Lewisham. Kieran, I had no idea there was a hummus workshop in Lewisham. But Sammy says, in Lewisham, I rarely see kids wearing Millwall kits, but I see loads of kids in Brighton wearing Brighton kits. Now, I would have thought that might be more to do with the fact that Brighton are a Premier League team, but I know. But Sammy's theory that this is because Brighton wear Nike, but Millwall wear Macron, which is arguably not considered as cool. Is there a logic to that argument, Kieran? Do you think Millwall would sell more shirts to young people if they were from a so-called cooler supplier?
I'm not convinced about this because I've seen clubs such as Southend before who've had their kits manufactured by Nike and they weren't necessarily big sellers. I think the issue in terms of Brighton versus London is that Brighton is a one-club city and London, as you know yourself, you've got so many clubs competing for the affection of fans and therefore there actually might be quite a few kids in Millwall shirts, but because you are also more likely to see other kids in Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, Fulham, you know, QPR, Palace, you know, whoever it's going to be, that they sort of become lost in the mix. So I don't have an issue with Macron. In fact, I took a look at the Millwall shirt this morning. Remember, I am an Elephant and Castle lad myself.
Oh, dear, so, I know.
And for me, you know, any club that is sponsored by Husky Chocolate, you know, is fine by me. So I thought it was quite a cool shirt.
Yeah, that wouldn't have happened in the old days, Kieran. The old Millwall wouldn't have been sponsored by Husky Chocolate, would it?
No. My Uncle Terry wouldn't be happy with that.
Well, Terry's all gold. He would have been. I'm also on a bound to say, as a Palace fan, back in the 70s and 80s, you very rarely saw anybody wear a Millwall shirt because they didn't like to announce themselves before they jumped to your coach, basically. Now, Kieran, this is a little bit awkward, isn't it? Because we've done a lot of childish laughing on recent pods about football clubs announcing they have a below-the-waist grooming partner. But now that's exactly what we've got. Because support for this episode of The Price of Football comes from Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped has just launched in the UK and they offer precision-engineered tools for your precision-engineered tool. Kieran, we both got sent a lovely box full of stuff to try. I'm not doing it, Kieran. I'll tell you why. Mrs. Day won't let me because she said the only time I did try it, I looked like Ross Kemp down there, which is no good. But you've gone deep end, haven't you?
I have indeed. I've tried this once or twice before when I was younger, but this is a whole new ball game, Kevin. A whole new ball game. This product is it's lightweight. It's ergonomic. It's one hand required only. Things lots of positives. And this is version 3.0 in the UK. It's got a cutting edge ceramic blade. You can go short. You can go long as much as you wish. It's got a nice LED light, so you know when the battery's running out and all of these things. And it's now got a 7,000 RPM. Quiet stroke technology. I only wish I had quiet stroke technology when I was a teenager. So all is good about this. I've got to say, I'm now a convert. I think people should try this firsthand for yourself. So yeah, make your testies your besties.
Well, Kieran, you've done a fair old selling job there, but I'm afraid our listeners will still have to take the rough with this move. You can, if you feel so inclined, if you want your pubic area to look like a freshly mown football pitch, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL, all one word, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL. Your balls will thank you. Okay. Well, we need a grown-up question after that, and it comes from Robert Curtis. Robert, thank you for your grown-up question, although I suspect you didn't know where it was going to go in the order of the podcast. And actually, this is one of those questions that I really like, because on the face of it, this is a question we probably should have been dealing with right from podcast one. And it's because I read it and went, oh, I don't know. And it's a very simple question. But it's, what is the difference, says Robert, between administration and receivership? Wigan, as the latest example, went into administration and received an automatic 12-point deduction. But my team, says Robert, Blackpool, went into receivership and the EFL did not deduct points.
Right. And the difference is that administration is where normally the club's directors will appoint administrators to protect the club from its creditors. And this can often result in what's referred to as a pre-pack sale. So you put the club into administration and then you buy it back immediately from the administrators. Now, football was actually quite guilty of this in the mid-2000s. Mm. And to be fair to the EFL, this is why they introduced penalties to stop clubs from overspending, stiffing their creditors, effectively selling the club for a pound back to themselves and starting off all over again. Receivership is where the lender appoints somebody to run the company. So instead of being protected from the creditors, you are now being controlled by somebody appointed by the creditors. Normally in receivership, you'll need a mortgage in order to do that, or a charge, and then the company would be liquidated. It's far less popular. Certainly when I was involved in the world of insolvency, which was in the late 80s, receivership was the way that struggling companies were dealt with. Administration was actually brought out as a faster, cheaper alternative, and that's why it's become more popular. In respect of Blackpool, I went into the small print. They were potentially on a 12-point penalty charge. I think the EFL under Sean Harvey, who was the previous chief executive, I think the best way I can describe it was a light touch organisation. And they described the receivership, and I quote, not material to the club's ability to fulfil its obligations as a member of the EFL, and therefore we're not going to apply the penalty. And to be frank with you, because Owen Oyston, the convicted rapist who used to own Blackpool, because he wasn't involved in appointing the receiver, he couldn't therefore be seen to be trying to manipulate the activities of the company.
Okay, I see. And on a similar note, Brett Peckham, great name, Brett Peckham, says, when a club goes into administration, and again, I'm sorry, Wigan fans, but you are the latest example, which is why people keep using you as an example. When a club goes into administration, how do they pick which players to sell? Because you clearly want to sell good players to make money, but presumably you don't want to sell your best players, because then that will dilute the selling price of the club.
Well, what will happen is that the first thing you do in administration is that you have a chat with normally the chief executive, the chief scout, the manager, and so on, and you'll prepare a cash flow statement. You say, well, this is how much it's going to cost us per week or per month to run this football club. If you've been appointed by the directors, the chances are you might be struggling to find a bank to give you an overdraft. So you look at this. This is how much money we need to generate in order to pay the wages, in order to fulfill the fixtures. And then you work out which players can generate that amount of money faster, as fast as possible. I appreciate fully what Brett is inferring, that if you take a look at what happened with Wigan, they sold Jensen Weir, they sold Joe Gelhart, they sold Alfie Devine, and they got fire sale prices for those players, if truth be told. But it did give the club the cash to fulfill its fixtures and also be sold as a going concern. The responsibility of the administrator is to sell the assets of the club. And they are aware that by selling assets on an individual basis, it of course reduces the value of the business as a whole, but they will be focusing upon those short-term cash needs initially. I suspect you might have experienced similar issues at Palace when you were involved with the administration there, when you were one of the trustees of the Palace Foundation.
Absolutely. When I wasn't back then, I was a trustee of something else, but yeah, I understand your point. But are there administrators that specialise in football, Kieran, or does an administrator come in and just look at the book value of a player and go, right, we need this amount of money, these three players will get us this amount of money?
Well, if we take a look at what has been happening in football, Begbie's trainer have become the go-to people in respect of football administrations because they've got experience, so therefore they've got contact books and things of this nature. So if you were the directors of a club, you say, well, we think we need to put the club into administration. To whom should we go? You say, well, Wigan, this club, that club, they've all been dealt with by Begbies or all dealt with by another firm of administrators. Therefore, they would appear to be the go-to guys. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're better or worse. It's a bit like me in all the football finance interviews. Because I've done a couple before, you then go, or you go onto somebody's Rolodex or you go into somebody's contacts book and you end up, I was on Sky 10 minutes before this show was recorded, and I've got another radio show as soon as we finish. It's not because I'm better or worse. It's simply because you're known as a contact, and it sort of becomes a bit of a snowball effect.
Yes, also because Swiss Ramble doesn't give his number away to anybody who asks, isn't it? That's part of the problem. Your 14-month-old granddaughter would have got her first taste of, she was bouncing up and down on granddad's knee, happily eating Yorkshire pudding and gravy, and granddad went, oh, okay, I've got a radio interview. Sorry, darling. Toby Gray asked a very simple question. Toby says, was last season the best ever to be promoted to the Premier League from a financial point of view due to the obvious reduction in EFL revenue this season?
Yeah, it's a great question from Toby. I think it probably was, because if you take Leeds United, 38% of their revenue in the Championship was coming through ticket sales. And they were selling more tickets than any other club in the Championship. And in fact, they were making more money from ticket sales than half the clubs in the Premier League itself. So if that was taken away at the knees, as we've seen this season with COVID, they would have had a very significant financial hit. So from a financial perspective, it was really good. And also, they were the best team in the Championship last season. Nobody, I don't think, can dispute that, no matter how bitter they are against Leeds. So yes, it was very much the best time to go up. There is a frustration, because the benefits of being in the Premier League in terms of this season, they might have been able to charge a bit more for tickets. And certainly if you speak to the guys that are selling hospitality packages, the plans that they had for when Manchester United and Liverpool and Chelsea and so on came to Elland Road, they could have effectively named their price. So they'll be frustrated by that, but the £100 million of TV money has really acted as a very good buffer for some of the financial challenges that are affecting all clubs in all levels of football this season.
It will be really frustrating. There's no point denying that West Brom and Fulham will probably struggle this season. It would be awfully frustrating for the fans and the club if the only season they had in the Premier League for some time was this COVID season, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you know, because football is fans.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Let Fans In campaign has been successful, and we should carry on pressurising the powers that be. Because as we've proven in today's conversation, you can watch football in a cinema, yeah. You can watch football in a hospitality lounge. So why can't you watch it at a football stadium?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Let Fans In campaign in more detail on Thursday, hopefully. And hopefully we'll get to talk to somebody from that campaign. It's been a while since we've been to Spain, Kieran, which is a shame. But Nick Malvezzi says, it seems for as long as I can remember that Valencia has been in all sorts of financial trouble. Despite back in the day selling players like David Silva, Juan Mata and David Villa and being semi-regulars in the Champions League, it always seems that they are scraping to get by while having a constant fire sale of their top players. Is that just because of poor ownership?
No. Blame it on the bankers. This goes back to the financial crisis of just over a decade ago. And at the time, Valencia were in the process of building what's referred to as the new Mestalla, apologies for my pronunciation, a brand new stadium, which they started in around about 2009 and which is presently unfinished due to issues to do with construction and issues to do with the global economy that was, you know, the fault of, and I'm quite happy to say this, of the accountants, the ratings agencies and the bankers. And as a result of that, Valencia have debts of around about a quarter of a billion.
Wow.
And they've got the worst of both worlds. They've got the debt, but they've not got the stadium to generate the revenue because that stadium is unfinished. Oh. As a consequence, they've been in a constant fire sale scenario ever since. And it's a tragedy for a club that has got such great history and heritage and has produced absolutely amazing players. David Silva, you know, one of my favourite players of all time as far as the Premier League is concerned.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about your Spanish pronunciation, Kieran, considering I just called him David Villa. We've got three more questions left, and they're all good questions. Our next question, again, takes us to the continent, but via another continent. Alex Blanton. Hello, Alex. Alex Blanton says, I'm a student from America, and listening to your podcast has inspired me to major in accounting and hopefully go work for a club when I graduate. I don't know whether to apologise for that or not, Alex. And if Kieran is that inspiring, Alex is probably having a downstairs trim as we speak. But Alex says that he follows all the America. This might be a female, Alex, in which case I apologise profusely. But Alex says he follows all the Americans that play in Europe. And recently, Weston McKennie moved from Schalke to Juventus as part of what was described as a survival plan. And basically, Alex wants to know, what's happened to Schalke, one of the biggest clubs in Germany? What's happened to Schalke to make them a team that needs a survival plan?
To a certain extent, they're guilty of overextending themselves. We were talking about Leeds a little bit while ago. I think the same can be said of Schalke. In order to be competitive with Bayern Munich, you have to spend a lot of money and you've got to sign the right players. Now, with Schalke, unfortunately, they made some bad decisions in terms of recruitment. That left them with a wage bill which was difficult to sustain. That starts to lead to a fire sale. And I think the corollary with Leeds is that you end up struggling on the park as a result. And it takes a long time to turn around that particular type of problem.
Does there come a time, Kieran, when a team like Schalke, for example, or Dortmund has to do what Arsenal more or less admitted that they didn't, say, look, we can't compete with Bayern Munich, let's try and finish fourth, and that could be considered a success and we'll stay financially viable? Because it seems to me that even attempting to compete with Bayern, you're on a hiding to nothing, aren't you?
Very much so. And look what happened to Arsenal when the fans got fed up of finishing fourth. It's a classic case of be careful what you wish for. And Arsenal, certainly from a financial point of view, have become detached from the rest of their peer group. And I would say financially their peer group have been Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, And Liverpool, you know, I wouldn't have even included Spurs there, but Spurs now have the infrastructure in a non-COVID world to leap over Arsenal in terms of the wages that they can afford to pay. A couple of years outside of the Champions League, i.e. not finishing fourth, can be hugely damaging for a club's long-term finances.
See, that's the beauty of this pod. You start off talking about Schalke and you finish up by annoying Arsenal fans. Our penultimate question comes from Andy Davis. Now, Andy says that his father-in-law lives in northeast Derbyshire, a lovely part of the world, and he wants to know if his council tax goes towards the cost of Chesterfield Football Club now, and will he get a reduction if Chesterfield do well and sell a player for £10 million?
Well, I think the good news is that the relationship between the council and the new owners, for people not familiar, Chesterfield is now sort of a community, a charity-owned club, which is fantastic. That ties into all sort of our principles. Mm. The council have given money, not forever. You know, it's on more of a loan basis to help the setup of this organisation, because they're aware of the importance of a football club to a local community in terms of both its physical and mental well-being. If Chesterfield do develop a successful player and sell them at a profit, I don't think it's a direct link in terms of how the council will benefit, but I think that they will benefit from the fact that people in the town, I think, will be quite proud under those circumstances, and that will engender a more positive vibe in that town itself. And again, as an away fan, I've had some great days out in Chesterfield. Mm. So yeah, it'll be one of those clubs you'd be wanting to do well.
Yeah, and God knows any club anywhere near the Northwest needs a positive vibe at the moment. Our final question, Kieran, comes from Tom Sauvage. I've gone for the coolest possible pronunciation of that name. If it's actually pronounced Sauvage, as in sausage, I beg your pardon, but I imagine it's Tom Sauvage. And I imagine somebody called Tom Sauvage can only be 100% cool. I imagine Tom Sauvage in a white fitted T-shirt. I don't know why. It's a great name, isn't it? Tom Sauvage. Tom wonders how the finances of a team like Hashtag United compare, not just to non-league teams around them, but in general, because of their significant online fan base.
I think what you'll find with clubs such as Hashtag United is that initially their finances will give them a wee bit of a competitive advantage to those around them, and also to clubs in perhaps a division or two above. The problem with projects of this nature, and we've seen it with other clubs who have tried to be sort of more broad fan-owned, is that there's a very high, what we refer to as a churn rate, is that people put their money in initially, they like the idea of being involved in the decision-making process, and then actually that you find that sort of making decisions by app or by WhatsApp or things of that nature quickly gets very boring. It's a bit like running a fantasy football team where after 7 or 8 games, you know you're going to finish somewhere between 8th and 12th and you lose all interest. Mm. And it's continuing to maintain that interest that I think will be the challenge for Hashtag United in terms of the way that they operate. But in broad principle, it's a challenging idea. It's a novel idea, and you wish people well. How long it can survive? Because there is a large dropout rate. That will be the real issue.
And the problem is, of course, that the media get bored quite quickly. Because initially, you know, Hashtag United have been live on the BBC in an FA Cup game behind a red button. You know, Sky are all over it. They send cameras down, and then 2 months later, they've lost interest completely and moved on to the next thing, haven't they? And once you drop out of that media interest, it is, as you say, very difficult to sustain what is a good idea.
Yeah. And also, it doesn't have necessarily a natural fan base. Mm. You know, for the first 2 or 3 games, you might be willing to travel 70 or 80 miles to see a home game. And if they don't do particularly well and you don't sort of strike up a relationship with other fans there, then you might say, well, okay, let's just pretend this never happened.
Yeah, and it's harder to create a heritage as well, isn't it? I mean, other teams are trying it. Ebbsfleet tried it, but at least Ebbsfleet were an existing an existing team, so it's hard to sort of create a history. But I still think it's a good idea, and I hope it succeeds. As always, I will leave you by saying, if you have a question for us, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. And as I said earlier, I think our Thursday pod will be dominated by the so-called new blueprint from Man United and Liverpool. So any questions you have about that, please ask us for then. And I shall hand you over to Kieran to say goodbye.
Well, folks, thanks again for your feedback. Thanks for the reviews on the Apple podcast and the other apps that you use. All we can say is it does make a difference in terms of where we stand in terms of the league tables. We don't make money. I've not got a penny from this. Yeah, we're not making money from the podcast. We're not trying to relieve you of cash. But also, it's nice to say something nice about people anyway. If you give a five-star review, then that works for us. And also, when we're trying to book guests for the show, if they look to see that we're doing reasonably well in the podcast charts, then it adds a bit of credibility to otherwise, people turn around and say, Guy, to produce a guy, well, we've never heard of those two blokes, and your number 174 in the charts. Yeah. So for that reason, if you could hit the subscribe button as well, you'll get this twice a week. We try to make it as a combination of information, entertainment, and analysis for you folks. And also, just keep hammering us with the questions. It keeps us on our toes. And apart from that, stay safe, look after yourselves, look after your loved ones.
Yes. And in the meantime, we will sit back and wait for the barrage of tweets about genital topiary. The Price of Football. Price of Football.